Welcome to the New Mexico News Podcast, headlines and stories from the land of enchantment. Brought to you by KRQE. Here's Chris McKee and Gabrielle Burkhart.
It has been called possibly the biggest police corruption case in Albuquerque. An alleged scheme linking officers within Albuquerque Police's DWI unit and a local attorney. News 13 has learned that federal investigators are looking into accusations that officers were getting paid to get DWI cases dismissed.
If you watch, read, or listen to New Mexico or Albuquerque news, even if it's just this podcast, there's a good chance you've heard about this story. There's still a lot of questions and details to be determined about what and who all this alleged scheme is tied to and how far back it goes. But this week, we want to get into what we do know so far. Federal agents conducted multiple raids on the homes of Albuquerque police officers and a well-known defense attorney in January. In fact, those raids happened shortly after our interview with APD Chief Medina on this podcast.
The details of those raids have not been made public by federal authorities because that FBI investigation is still ongoing. And really, federal policy is that investigators essentially say nothing until they make their filings in court. They let those filings do all of the talking. But local investigative journalists, including two of the people sitting here in this room, have been piecing together some of the puzzle and publishing stories about what we've learned so far. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Myself, along with the rest of KRQE News 13's investigative team, have been reporting on this story as it continues to unfold. Today, we've brought in one of those people digging up details in this case. That's my cohort on the KRQE Investigates Unit, Ann Perrette. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start when this investigation came into public view. Again, this was in January when we learned that federal agents were raiding the homes of a few APD officers and an uptown area office of a local defense attorney, a guy named Thomas Clear III. When this news was breaking, I remember, you know, having conversations with sources, and there were other reporters in the newsroom doing the same thing. But a lot of what we learned initially was on background or off the record, and it required more digging. And much of our investigative work started when the district attorney's office announced it had a list of more than 150 DWI cases that were suddenly being dropped by prosecutors.
Now, at the time, one of the things that stood out to me was how District Attorney Sam Bregman couldn't say much, but essentially he said he had no choice but to do it because his, quote, prosecutorial ethics require him to dismiss these cases.
All I can tell you is that I have no choice. We have to do this, and unfortunately we dismissed 150 DWI cases. But my ethics require that, and that's something we're not gonna change.
And another major factor that we learned early on, and the reason why so many cases were dismissed by the district attorney's office, pertains to something called a Giglio list. So this is a public list of witnesses that the DA's office keeps, specifically naming law enforcement officers whose credibility has been called into question. So for example, say a main witness cannot be deemed credible by the court. That's a problem when trying to prosecute a case, which again goes on to explain why so many cases were dropped. So we know four APD officers who would have been considered main witnesses in these DWI cases that were dropped. They were added to the Bernalillo County DA's Giglio list in early January. Their names were provided to the DA by the local U.S. Attorney's Office as it related to this federal investigation. And those officers named on the Giglio list in January are Honorio Alba, Nelson Ortiz, Joshua Montano, and Harvey Johnson, all of APD.
So to be clear, no one has been criminally charged in this investigation yet, but those four officers that Gabby mentioned as being added to that Giglio list, they are also on the list of officers who've been placed on administrative leave. So on January 25th, APD Chief Harold Medina confirmed it was a total of five officers being placed on leave. It was those four Gabby mentioned, as well as the fifth officer, Lieutenant Justin Hunt. We learned just last week that Officer Honorio Alba resigned from Albuquerque Police on the eve of what would have been his internal affairs investigation interview with the department. Lieutenant Justin Hunt also resigned last month amid this federal probe. City records show that Lieutenant Hunt was the city of Albuquerque's highest paid employee, raking in more than $250,000 a year.
But first, I want to start with a little bit about talking about, you know, we've worked hard
over the past few years that I've been chief to build community trust and to be transparent and focus on crime fighting while reforming the department. As a result, we are in a position to expose a huge internal case for the Albuquerque Police Department and hopefully get the resolution that we're hoping for, and make sure that anybody who's been accused, that we have solid cases both on the administrative side and on the criminal side.
As we mentioned, News 13 has learned this federal investigation surrounds accusations that certain officers were getting paid to get DWI cases dismissed. And one of the ways we know cases do get dismissed has been an issue brought up in years past. That is officers who just don't show up to court.
So we asked the court and the DA's office whose job it is to notify APD when an officer doesn't show up to court. Metro Court PIO Camille Baca sent us an emailed statement on January 31st saying in part, quote, "It is not the court's responsibility to get witnesses to hearings. Metro Court does not currently have a system in place nor a policy for notification to an agency or individual when an officer or prosecutor fails to appear in court." And this is again in January. She goes on to say, however, last week, Metro Court was asked by local law enforcement to develop such a system as a courtesy. It's important to remember that most court records are public, in which specific dismissal information, if applicable, can be found through various resources, such as the court's website or visiting the courthouse. So she goes on to say basically that it is not Metro Court's responsibility, but they were asked to develop a system. She also says Metro Court utilizes an officer check-in system, which the court developed in 2007. Though officers can check in at one of the court kiosks as they enter the courthouse or check in online for appearing a virtual hearing, she says the court doesn't use that officer check-in system for tracking purposes.
So, Anne, we've given a lot of context, a lot of background. Let's bring you in here. The idea of officers not showing up for court, it is something that you have had the opportunity to talk about even before this investigation. As I understand, it was one of your first investigations, right?
Right, yeah.
So since then, of course, this whole story has emerged. It's put a new round of questions about officers failing to show up for court. You've had an opportunity here now since the story has emerged to ask APD Chief Harold Medina about this system. So you had a one-on-one interview with him first. Then you were also part of a news conference, as I understand, in early February, where Chief Medina further explained this process, officers not showing up to court, what's going on there. So just to ask you very broadly, what is Chief Medina's take on this whole officer notification issue?
It's a little convoluted, to say the least. I think a lot of us left that press conference you mentioned with more questions than answers. And sometimes that's unfortunately our job, is just kind of to present, right? Well, this is what they said. We asked this. We couldn't get a specific answer on this. But how he described it is that there should be these missed court notices generated when an officer does not show up to a court hearing. He told us that every missed court notice received is looked into, but an officer missing court hasn't always triggered a notice, or that notice didn't always go to the right place. What that means, we couldn't get a clear answer on. We do know he says that the DA's office is responsible for creating those missed court notices, sending them to APD's court services unit. As of 2019, APD's internal affairs unit was then tasked with looking into every single one of those, determining, was this a legitimate reason for missing? Those reasons being they were maybe on a felony call or something like that.
There are legitimate reasons why officers could miss court.
Exactly. But then we know prior to 2019, the chief said it was the individual officer's commander who would receive that notice and then look into the reasoning. I asked, okay, are you looking at any of those commanders then? Is there some suspicion that maybe they weren't passing that along? At that point in February, he did say, you know, we're not leaving any stone unturned, was the phrase he repeatedly used. The other thing it's important to point out is at that same press conference in February, he mentioned that they had not received a notice, a missed court notice, since September of 2022. It was 16 months of not receiving these. Now, you'd think that would be a red flag. You'd think that that would be interesting. You'd think that somebody would say, hey, something's going on here. We couldn't get a straight answer on why that didn't happen. Nobody reacted in that way. He did not blame the DA for that. He made that very clear. This is not the district. You know, I'm not placing blame on the DA for this, but also said that they believe it was a system failure at the DA's office that may have resulted in the lack of these being generated. And a week before that February press conference also said, we got all of the 2023 missed court notices last week. So trying to understand too, in that same conversation, well, are you going through those now? What does that look like?
Yeah. And we should note here, you know, the bigger picture, why is it so important that we're having this conversation about whether or not officers made it to court? Part of that, as I understand, really is because of the fact that this went on for so long. And there's that idea that if notifications were getting to where they needed to go, perhaps that this could have been picked up that, oh, this officer or that officer has a strange number of not showing up for court. Is there a connection here? Because I think one of the big things that we've talked about here, right, is that how did this situation, investigation now, how is it spanning back over a decade, right? How could something like this that supposedly is wrong, according to the sort of investigative narrative, how could it have existed for so long? So that's why this is so important, right? To know about this whole officer notification system is because it should have been a warning sign, a red flag, right?
Right. But I think it's also important to note that Chief spoke to counsel after this press conference. There was a counsel meeting the following week, and he was grilled by counsel, as expected. And one of the things that he said was, I don't think we need to just be looking at failure to appear court notices. So while we definitely have seen that as a problem for years, and as you mentioned in my very first investigation, one of my first investigations here.
In 2022.
Yes, that was looked into. That was a big part of the story, was why are officers failing to appear? So many things had changed to make it easier. So it's long been a problem, but I don't think they always thought that it was on the officer. That makes sense.
Yeah. And it is a lot to sort of unpack in that press conference in February when there were reporters asking the chief about this situation. You could tell also that APD, they can't say everything,
right?
Which he did make it clear, you know, it's still an ongoing investigation. They've now launched an internal investigation to look into this. So I want to play just a little bit of that back and forth when Ann was trying to press the chief on these notifications.
Okay, so a DWI case.
A DWI case.
An officer misses, doesn't show up for a DWI case.
Yes.
What is the process of you, somebody within the department, getting notified?
We rely on being notified by the district. For if they didn't show up to court, we rely on being notified by the district attorney's office.
And that's one of those missed court notices?
This one of those missed court notices that go to the Albuquerque Police Department.
And to who does it go?
And it goes to court services.
Okay. And is that fully staffed? Is there
somebody? Court services does have a supervisor who goes through them. And the supervisor is the one advising us that we haven't been received, that there's limited court notices that we've gotten.
So are you saying that this is on the DA's office then?
No, we're not saying that because we still are early in this investigation and we have to check and see. I cannot point fingers at the DA's office right now because we have to make sure, like, this is very early and this is where it's very difficult. We're still in the investigation to see. I can't sit here and say they didn't get to us. We need to do an investigation to make sure and see what is occurring.
But if you're saying it's their responsibility to generate that notice and let you know,
we're getting into too much detail of the direction we're still going with our investigation.
So after your story about that explanation from APD, DA's office spokeswoman Nancy Laughlin sent us a statement disputing what the chief was then saying at that press conference. So her response said in part, quote, "It's simply not true and has never been true that the DA's office has the responsibility to notify APD of missed court appearances." So the DA's spokeswoman said the chief should, quote, refocus on putting things in place to prevent this type of disaster from happening again. Continuing in that statement, Laughlin added, quote, although the district attorney's office has never been under any obligation to ensure officers show up for scheduled court appearances, we've put in place an additional robust notification system so APD will be aware when their officers miss court. She went on to say, quote, the bottom line is holding accountable those people who are drinking and driving and the safety of our community, end quote.
So since then, that back and forth between the statements from the DA's office and then you've got APD Chief Harold Medina in the news conference, since that occurred, we really have not heard anything more about this issue of police failing to appear in court and its connection into that broader federal investigation. It sounds like both Metro Court and the DA's office, though, are saying it's not their obligation to make sure officers show up for court. However, both of those agencies are suggesting it's incumbent on APD to make sure its own officers show up for their hearings, and that agency should be holding those officers accountable when they fail to meet expectations. We want to emphasize again in this whole discussion here, no one has even gotten to a point here where they're facing criminal charges tied to this investigation into APD officers in the DWI unit. We should also add that alongside the Fed's continued investigation, we know that APD has launched an internal investigation into allegations surrounding officers in the DWI unit.
In early February, I also obtained a copy of a letter from the court executive officer, Katina Watson. She sent this letter in November to the Civilian Police Oversight Agency, or CPOA, and that's the outside investigative arm of APD, which was remade as part of the DOJ settlement agreement. Watson's letter claimed a former Bernalillo County District Court employee was pulled over and charged with DWI last August of 2023. She says this former employee alerted the court to his arrest because of something that happened to him. So in the letter Watson sent to the CPOA, she wrote, quote, there may be questionable conduct by the arresting officer, more specifically that the arresting officer put the employee in contact with a specific attorney, possibly named Rick, who, if hired, would ensure that no court case would be filed in court by APD, end quote. So what happened to that letter and the allegations in it? As we understand, once the CPOA was alerted, it was soon after told by APD that there was a bigger investigation going on. We learned the officer who made the arrest of that former court employee was Honorio Alba. He filed a citation in that DWI stop 10 days after the letter was sent to the CPOA, which would have been months after the initial DWI stop itself in August. Alba, as you may recall, was initially placed on leave as part of this internal investigation and then just last week resigned from APD. And we know that a guy named Rick Mendez is Thomas Clear III's paralegal. He's the attorney who's been named in this investigation.
But we should note as well that the CPOA letter only mentioned a person named Rick. It did not specifically say who that Rick was. Okay, you, Gabby, and the investigative team, you've all been going through this entire list of dismissed cases in detail. We know that the majority of them are DWI cases, but there are a few other cases in there that are not specifically DWI. This total list of dropped cases is now around 200 from the time that we are recording this. And the DA says prosecutors have been forced to drop them as a result of this ongoing federal probe. So Anne, you and our digital investigative data reporter, Curtis Segarra, have also been going through some of the old court records, right, and looking at really the numbers, in particular as they relate to attorney Thomas Clear III, which cases he handled. So can you give us an idea of maybe what you found so far based on the numbers?
Right. Attorney Thomas Clear III, he's been an attorney in this city for 3 decades or longer is what we found going through court records. We only looked at cases that involved a DWI charge, felony, misdemeanor, things like that. There were 6 different specific charges that we were looking at in this data. And going back several years, we found that his dismissal rate is almost double all of both APD's dismissal rate and the entire Bernalillo County's dismissal rate. Bernalillo County APD for 1 year, close to like 30-35%. For attorney Thomas Clear, it's 60, 65% of his cases, DWI cases, being dismissed. And when you then break it down to the four APD officers who we've repeatedly mentioned are on leave, are on that Giglio list, it is almost a 100% dismissal rate.
On cases involving CLEAR and those four officers.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. So while this is playing out, there are, of course, facts that, again, APD and federal authorities cannot say or talk about publicly because this is an ongoing investigation. But we've been publishing reports on some of the cases and some of the facts that we have learned so far. And you reported on a story specifically involving a DWI case that Officer Honorio Alba handled where the alleged drunk driver was sent home the same night. Tell us what you can about that case.
Yeah, that's unheard of, right?
Right. It's not typical that you see somebody arrested for DWI that just gets to go home. I think the phrase is often said, you get a DWI, you're going to jail. So just seeing that already is kind of a interesting difference.
Exactly. And this case certainly helped us kind of look at how APD may have been mishandling some of these DWI investigations. This case was one of the now 200 cases dismissed by the DA's office. What we noticed were motions to dismiss the case filed just days before this federal investigation came to light. And the woman's attorney said that Officer Honorio Alba had violated APD's standard operating procedures, two of them. Number one, his body camera was taken off, so the attorney could not hear her client's interactions with the officer. And the other thing was that he did not transfer the client to MDC, again, meaning he let her go that night. So his reasoning, as we learn in both from the lapel and some of the court records, he had said that the prisoner transport center was closed. Now, this is the spot where after an arrest is made, it's in downtown, you bring the defendant, the person you just arrested there, to book them on a DWI case. That's typically where they take the breathalyzer test. And she actually refused to take the breathalyzer test. So that makes it more interesting, too, because now this is an aggravated DWI. So he tells her the prisoner transport center is closed. You need to call for a ride, gives her phone, has her call for a ride. So this is interesting because for a number of reasons. Number one, you can see that they're inside the prisoner transport center.
That he's saying is closed.
That he's saying is closed. And I did reach out to APD to ask, what does it look like when the prisoner transport center is closed? And they said, well, it would literally be closed. You can't get in the door, you know? So that red flag right there. Then again, on top of that, with this being an aggravated DWI, this kind of elevates this case, right?
But then you see him kind of walk her out the front door.
Yes, that was another concern that the attorney brought up. She was upset with how Officer Alba let her client go. She says, my ride's here. He says, all right, takes her to the front door, says no more drinking and driving tonight. Opens the door for her. She runs out the door. You see that there's a truck outside on the road. I can't tell if it's running. I don't know if that's the car she's getting into. And we'll never know because he closes the door before you ever see this woman at 3:15 in the morning. He just lets her go. You don't see her get in a car. You don't know, did she end up getting in the driver's side of that car? We have no idea. He turns around, turns off his lapel camera. We noticed through, again, looking through these 200 cases that Officer Alba has done this a number of times where he said the prisoner transport center is closed, let somebody go, and then sent a summons weeks later. And this attorney told me summons are normally only sent if this person was sent to the hospital after their arrest. So again, another red flag here.
One thing that stuck out to me hearing the attorney speak in your story was that she said, you know, in that moment, Officer Alba arrested this woman who he believed was drunk because he's charging her with DWI and he had a right to protect her and keep her safe. But yet we saw her just like walk out of the door in the middle of the night downtown to get a ride home.
Yeah, 3:15 in the morning. Speaking with APD on what should have happened if the prisoner transport center was actually closed, they told me dispatch would have alerted the officer, you can't take her here. And it would have been his obligation to then drive her to MDC, where she would have been booked and spent the night. Now we know from kind of going through a few of these, there are several times when he says, right, that the PTC was closed and he should have been taking that drive and bringing these people there.
But we begin with another big development in the scandal that has rocked APD's DWI unit. The chief revealed today a second officer, Honorio Alba Jr., is no longer on the job.
Got notified this morning that he had resigned. I could just say this is, I'm not shocked that they resigned.
Again, Chief Medina announced just last week that Officer Honorio Alba resigned Thursday morning on the eve of his scheduled internal affairs investigation interview. So he was not interviewed by APD as part of their investigation. Four officers remain on leave, and again, no officers at this point have been charged yet as part of this investigation.
And thanks for chatting with us about this. We know this investigation continues to unfold, and we're going to take a quick break. And after that break, we'll talk a little bit more with Gabby about her recent report for KRQ Investigates that gives us a bit more insight into how this alleged scheme may have worked with another officer. And we are back. Gabby, let's talk a bit more about this investigation that you published recently. This involved a recording that attorneys say reveals more about how this potential DWI scheme may have worked. So you interviewed a man named Carlos Smith, right?
Yes.
He was arrested last summer for DWI. Can you tell me about this case? How did you hear about it?
Well, Carlos Smith came forward after this all unfolded and he saw the raids happening at Attorney Thomas Clear's office in January. According to his attorney now, who I've spoken with, his thought was, oh my gosh, I was in that house. Something weird happened to me too. So he goes and reports it and the ACLU ends up taking his case. Attorneys there know who I am and contacted me and said, hey, you know, we want to talk publicly about this case. So that's how this all unfolded. And he was arrested last summer for DWI. He tells me this whole ordeal, you know, loomed over him for 7 months before his case was dismissed in January. And he says it ruined his life. So in June of 2023, he was pulled over. He had a 16-year-old niece in the car with him. He was driving a Mustang and he was speeding, admittedly. Officer Joshua Montano pulled him over for speeding, checked his eyes, had him run through a series of field sobriety tests, and then said, you know, I need to give you the opportunity to take a breathalyzer test, which, as we mentioned earlier in this episode, that requires a trip to the prisoner transport center downtown where you are given the opportunity to take a breathalyzer test. So you can see in the lapel video in my story, Carlos admits he's nervous. He doesn't want to leave his cousin. And yeah, he just tells the officer that he's nervous. Mm.
So he's taken to the prisoner transport center. Smith willingly takes two breathalyzer tests that were below the legal limit of 0.08. And Officer Joshua Montano of Albuquerque Police still charges him with DWI. Then there's a part of the lapel video where you see Officer Montano, and we were just talking about this in our segment with Anne. You see Officer Montano take off his lapel camera and set that camera down, then walking away from the camera. So the mic on the camera is clearly far away from where the officer and the subject are. And it's during that interaction with Smith that Montano takes a piece of Smith's jewelry on a DWI stop.
Takes a piece of it off, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can see the officer set the camera down and they're still within view of the camera, but it becomes harder to hear because like you said, the mic is further away and there's air conditioning happening. So yeah, you can't hear their voices all that clearly, but you do hear Officer Montano say something like, you know, I'm going to take your Apple Watch off. And you see him take off a bracelet and an Apple Watch and sets it down. And that, to the attorneys at the ACLU, were telling me, you know, that was a red flag. Deputy Director for the ACLU of New Mexico, Leon Howard, is the attorney that I interviewed for this story. He's representing Smith now, and they have plans to sue APD and the officer involved for civil rights violations. But when I asked Leon Howard about this part of the interaction with his client, this is what he said.
So the fact that he took off his lapel camera to interact with Carlos while he was effectuating the arrest was improper, violates standard operating procedures, and again goes to show the officer's intent to extort Mr. Smith.
Howard also told me that Smith's gold bracelet was, quote, basically collateral to effectuate this relationship between the attorney.
It's corrupt. It's not normal process. Everything has a process. It's supposed to be bagged and placed into evidence. And when the person's booked and released, they get their stuff back.
So that brings us to a couple of recordings that were really surprising to hear in this story. The first one is a voicemail from Officer Montano. It sounds like identifying himself to Carlos Smith after the arrest. Is that correct?
Yeah. So in my conversation with Carlos Smith, he says he didn't really understand what was going on. He said, I was super confused by this whole process. Again, he maintains he was not driving drunk. You know, he performed pretty well by all means of the field sobriety tests. He did mention knee problems when he was trying to balance on one leg. You know, he did the eye test. He did walking in a straight line, saying a portion of the alphabet, counting backwards, things like that. And then ultimately, like you said, blew two breathalyzers that were below the legal limit. So he says to me in this interview, I was very confused by like why I was being charged in the first place. Then he says he gets a voicemail from Officer Montano calling him the next day. And at that point during our interview, I just asked him like, do you still have that voicemail? And he says, yes. And he, you know, shared with us the recording. So here is the voicemail from who he says was Officer Montano pretty much the day after he was arrested.
Hey, Carlos, this is Officer Montano with APD. I was just giving you a call because I don't know if you realize, but I'm sure you do that. Some of your jewelry was missing from your property from Sunday evening, and it looks like the PTC officers didn't put that in your property bag, but I have it. It's secured and heat-filled in a plastic bag, so I will try to give you a call here back sometime today and see how you'd like to get those items back to you.
So after that, Smith says he then spoke to Montano on the phone, and it was during that conversation, he says, that he was put in contact with Thomas Clear's law office, saying he could get his bracelet back from that attorney's office. Smith tells me he got a phone call from that attorney's office right away after he got off the phone with Montano. And then he ultimately went to an address that he says is Thomas Clear's law office, the same house that was raided by the feds earlier this year.
Where did you go?
And it was one of the houses that was raided and was on television. When I saw it, I was like, wow, I was at that house.
Smith says he was sent here, defense attorney Thomas Clear's office, raided by federal agents last month. The FBI is digging into a scheme that News 13 has learned surrounds accusations of officers being paid to get DWI cases dismissed.
This scheme perpetuates a narrative that outcomes can be bought and sold. It undermines our entire justice system.
The proof, he says, is in Smith's recorded interaction with Clear's paralegal Rick Mendez the day he retrieved his bracelet.
I knew from that moment I needed to document everything, and I did.
So there was also another recording that was shared with you in putting this story together. We mentioned the voicemail recording, but the second recording, it sounded like, was taken when he went to that law office of Thomas Clear III.
Yeah, this recording was something that Smith said he recorded on his cell phone. He said he had a bad feeling going over there, so he wanted to record his interaction and just document things that were happening. And he says he met a man who he later learned was Rick Mendez, Clear's paralegal. He says he was handed his bracelet at the beginning of that interaction and that he was given a business card at the end with Rick's name on it. Here is a portion of Smith's recording from that day.
How are you, sir?
You part of us?
Yes, I am, sir.
Smith says Mendez handed him the bracelet.
What is my next best step to try and not get this on my record? What do you recommend I do?
If you need to get off of this.
I do.
Okay, you're at the right place. If you're one of those people that can live with it, then go hire a cheap attorney, not the cheapest.
Okay.
So we charge $8,500 when you could do it in payments.
And with me, you representing me, that would guarantee that this doesn't go on my record?
Yes.
Okay, and the odds of me not going with you and going with a public defender, what do you think about that?
Roll the dice.
So yeah, just hearing that recording, I think it's remarkable that there's this offer here, $8,500, and the concept being that it wouldn't be filed. So here is this suggestion that $8,500, a lot of money for a defense attorney for a DWI, and that it would just go away.
It wouldn't go on his record. Yeah. So one of the first questions I had after hearing that was, okay, yeah, it sounds fishy, but you want to confirm, right? Is $8,500 a lot of money for something like a defense attorney in a DWI case? So I start calling defense attorneys that I know that I've, you know, worked with over the years on stories and sources and just start kind of taking a poll. It does sound, you know, within the general realm on a case by case basis, private attorneys can be expensive, but for a simple DWI case, like it sounds like what Smith was going through, that is high. That is a large amount. The average I was getting from attorneys who were kind of giving me quotes, what a DWI defense would generally cost was around like $2,000 to $5,000, sounds like kind of normal.
The other bombshell in this recording is that guarantee we talked about that Smith asked the paralegal about.
Yeah, and I asked Leon Howard about this, and he said very clearly that no attorney or paralegal should be offering a guarantee of an outcome in a court case. He said this basically presents to the public that outcomes can be bought and sold.
Is it okay for a paralegal or an attorney to offer a guarantee to a defendant?
That violates our professional code of conduct. That's 101. You do not guarantee outcomes.
So in this case, I think one of the big lingering questions was, did Smith actually pay that $8,500? How does the money come into play here?
So Smith did not pay. He said, I didn't, you know, I don't know if they thought maybe that I had money because of, you know, the Mustang and the bracelet, but he's like, I could not afford that. I was not going to pay it. And he says that, you know, he had a bad feeling about this whole thing. So he did not pay it. Leon Howard tells me that this is basically above market rate for a simple DWI case. He said, quote, the part where you read between the lines is some sort of benefit to the officer from the attorney who charges well above market rate.
The part where you read between the lines is some sort of benefit to the officer from the attorney who charges well above the market rate.
So Officer Joshua Montano is still one of those four officers currently on administrative leave pending this federal investigation and the internal investigation by APD. We mentioned Lieutenant Justin Hunt. He has resigned, along now with Officer Honorio Alba, who just resigned last week. Now, because Alba resigned right before his scheduled interview with APD's internal affairs investigators, an APD spokesman tells us that means he can no longer be compelled to be interviewed as part of the IA. Although APD says it will continue its internal investigation and there may be findings against him. Had Alba stayed on the force and refused to be interviewed as part of the IA, he could have been fired. There's also an internal affairs commander, a man named Mark Landovaso, who was additionally placed on administrative leave as of mid-February. You mentioned in your report, Gabby, that you tried to reach out to Montano and Thomas Clear III, but you didn't hear back. APD also wouldn't comment for this particular story pending the internal investigation. Did you learn anything else, though, in this reporting?
As part of our ongoing data digging, I wanted to know for this story how many cases Officer Montano was involved in with Thomas Clear. So we combed through the court data and found that over the last 6 years, at least, Montano was named as the officer in at least 36 cases with attorney Thomas Clear. Nearly 90% of those cases ended in dismissals. But again, no one has faced any criminal charges yet in this investigation. It's ongoing. As far as we know, the federal investigation is ongoing.
Well, we will continue to bring the latest on this investigation as it unfolds, doing that both with our on-air stories, but also the ones that go online at KRQE.com. You can click on the KRQE Investigates tab there, and you can find as well all of Gabby's reporting, Ann's reporting as well. You can check out the investigative playlist on our KRQE YouTube page as well. Watch some of the stories we've talked about. And I should note, we have a special thing called a tag on our website that gets pinned to all of these stories related to the DWI investigation. So we will post a link to that tag landing page, which will specifically filter out all of the stories that we've done about this topic.
And as we say in every podcast, email is also a good way to reach out to us. I've heard from several people after my latest story. You can reach me always at gabrielle.burkhardt@krqe.com via email and gburknm on social media.
Yeah, you can also reach out to me if you'd like as well. Usually if it's about this investigative stuff, I pass it on to Ann and Gabby, but it is chris.mckee@krqe.com, also at chrismckeetv. Thanks again for listening.